Thus the woman spoke in her abandonment. I have not imitated the actual sound of her plea and the lisping of her cloven tongue, for every syllable cut her like a knife, yet she lisped it all in one breath against his arm, for women can bear great pain. But so much must be clearly envisaged and settled, that the word of mistaking, the incisive phrase which has been handed down, did not issue from the sound lips of a grown person, but was thrust through and through by pain, and spoken as a child speaks. "Sleep with me," she said. For this was the purpose of the mangling of her tongue. And Joseph? He sat and ran over his seven reasons in his mind, conning them forwards and back. I would not assert that his blood did not rise in a wave to beat on the shore of his soul, but it met the wall of his seven reasons, and they held firm. To his credit be it said that he did not turn harshly against her, or treat the witch with contempt because she tempted him to destroy himself with God, but was mild and gentle, and sought in all honor to console her, despite the danger to himself, which, as anyone can see, lay in such a course. For where, once begun, would the consolations end? He did not even pull away his arm, regardless of the humid heat of her breath as she lisped and the touch of her lips, but left it where it was while she lisped herself out, and even a little longer, while he replied, "What do you, my mistress, with your face hidden on my arm? And what are you saying in the fever of your wound? Come to yourself, I implore you, for you forget yourself and me. For consider, your room is open, and we might be seen by a dwarf or by some ordinary man who would spy where you have your head. Forgive me, for if you permit, I must now take my arm away and see if outside—" He did as he said. She too lifted herself, but with violence, from the place where his arm no longer was, and stood stiffly erect, with flashing eyes and suddenly ringing voice, crying out words which should have taught him with whom he had to deal and what he might expect from her who but now had been crushed and imploring, and now seemed to lift her claws like a lioness. For the moment, she did not even lisp, for when she bore the pain, she could force her tongue, and she cried out with great distinctness, "Leave the hall open, that the whole world may look in upon me and you whom I love. Are you afeard? I fear neither gods, nor dwarfs, nor men, that they see me with you and spy upon our meeting. Let them come. Let them come in hosts to see us. I will fling to them like trash my modesty and shame, for they are not to me but trash and trumpery compared with what is between us and the world-forgotten need of my soul. Am I afeared? I alone am frightful in my love. Isis am I, and upon him who sees us would I cast a look from my eyes so frightful that he would pale in death upon the spot." Thus Moot the lioness, unmindful of her wound and the stabbing pain in every word. But he drew the curtains across between the pillars and said, "Let me then be careful for you, since it is given me to foresee what might happen were we spied upon. For that must be sacred to me which you would fling at the world's feet, which is not worthy of it, not even worthy to die of the scorn of your look." But when, after drawing the curtain, he came back to her in the shadow of the room, she was no longer a lioness, but a lisping child, yet with the wiliness of the serpent, too. For she turned round upon him his words, and stammered sweetly, "Have you shut us in, wicked one, enfolding us in shadow against the world, that it may no more protect me against your harshness? Ah, O Sarsif, how cruel you are, that you have so namelessly bewitched me, and changed my body and soul, that I know myself no more. What would your mother say if she knew how you bewitch human beings, and make them so that they know themselves no more? Were son of mine so lovely and so evil, and I might see him in you, my lovely, evil son, my son youth, whom I bore, and who at midday puts head and feet together with his mother to beget himself upon her anew. O Sarsif, do you love me upon earth as in heaven? Have I painted your soul when I painted the letter I sent you? And did your inwards quake as you read? As I too shuddered to my innermost soul with unquenchable shame and desire as I wrote? When you dupe me with your mouth, calling me the sovereign of your head and your heart, what does that mean? Do you say it because it is fitting, or in fervent sincerity? Confess to me here in the shadow, after so many nights of torturing doubt, when I lay alone, lay without you, and my blood cried out helplessly. You must heal me, my Savior, and redeem me, confessing that you spoke the lying language of beauty but to tell me the truth of your love. Joseph. Not so, great lady. But, yes, as you say. Yet spare yourself, if I must believe you look on me with favor. Spare yourself and me, I implore, for it pierces my heart to hear you force your injured tongue to shape your words, instead of cooling it with balsam, to shape cruel words. How could I not love you? You, my mistress. Upon my bended knees, I love you. Upon my bended knees, I beg you not to pry into the nature of that love, its humbleness and fervor, its reverence and sweetness, but graciously let it rest in its component parts, which make up a delicate and precious whole, undeserving of untwisting and unraveling in pitiless curiosity. No, bear with me still, and let me tell you. Gladly you hearkened when I spoke before you in many matters. Hear me then in this. For a good servant loves his master, if he be noble. For so is it ordained. But when the master becomes mistress and a lovely woman, then there comes a great sweetness and adoring fervor into the love, and permeates it. It is humility and sweetness, which are adoring tenderness, ardor, and inward imprecation against the cruel one who would approach it too closely with prying touch and angry glance. For that cannot come to good. When I call you sovereign of my head and heart, surely it is for the form's sake and fitting. But how sweet that it is fitting, so to speak. There lies a mystery which must be veiled in delicate silence. Is it then gracious or wise to break the silence and ask my meaning, leaving me in my answer a choice between a lie and a sin? That is a false and cruel choice. I can none of it, and I beg you on my knees that you will show kindness and mercy to the life of the heart. The woman. O Sarsif, you are frightful in your speaking beauty, which makes you appear godlike before men so that they serve you, yet the art of your speaking drives me to despair. That is a terrible deity, your art, child of intelligence and beauty, a mortal spell for the unhappily loving heart. You chide me for speaking, yet you speak in eloquent chiding, and say that beauty must be silent and not speak, that there must be silence about beauty as about the holy grave at Abdu, for love shall be silent like death. Yes, in silence they are like each other, and speaking wounds them. You demand that I show kindness and mercy to the life of the heart, and would seem to be on its side against my unraveling curiosity. But that is to turn the world upside down, for it is I who in my sore need fight for the life of the heart when I am driven to examine it. What else shall I do, beloved, and how help myself? I am mistress to you, my Lord and Savior, for whom I yearn, and I cannot spare your heart, nor let your love rest in peace for pity of it. I must be cruel. I must lay siege to it, as the bearded man lays siege to the tender maiden who does not know herself, and must wrest fervor from her humility and desire from her meekness, that she may be bold and able to grasp the thought that you sleep close beside me, for therein lies all the salvation of the world that you do so with me. It is a question of bliss or the torment of hell. It has become for me the torment of hell that our limbs are separate, yours there and mine here, and if you only speak of your knees, I am seized with unspeakable jealousy of them, that they are yours and not also mine, and they must be near to me, that you sleep with me, or I perish and am destroyed. Joseph, dear child, that cannot be. Let your servant implore you to consider and not cling fixedly to this idea, for it is born of evil. You put an exaggerated, a morbid value upon the idea that dust must lie close to dust. It would be lovely for a moment, but that it would outweigh the evil consequences and all the remorse coming after could be true only in your fevered dream. Lo, it is not good, and could never come to good, that you should lay siege to me as the bearded man, and woo me as your mistress for the satisfaction of my love. There is an abomination in it. It is unfitting to our days, for I am not slave enough for that, and I can myself conceive the idea. Only too well, I assure you. Yet may we not bring it to pass, for more than one reason, many more than one, a great number of them, like the constellation in the image of the bull. I beg you to understand that I may not set my teeth in the lovely apple which you offer me, that we should eat transgression and lose all. Therefore I speak and am not silent. Take it kindly of me, my child, for since I may not be silent with you, I must speak and choose consoling words. For your consolation, dearest mistress, lies close to my heart. The woman. Too late, O Sarsif, too late for you and for us both. You cannot retreat, nor I, for we are mingled. Have you not drawn the curtains and shut us in together in shadow apart from the world, so that we are paired together? Do you not already say we and us, we might be seen, drawing yourself and me together in sweet union in this precious word, the figure of all the bliss I offer you, which is already comprehended in it, so that the act has no new element after we have said we, for we have a secret together against all the world, and are two together with it, apart from the world, and naught remains but two. Joseph. No, but hear me, my child, that is not true, and you do violence to truth, so I must resist. It was your self-forgetfulness forced me to draw the curtain, for your honor's sake, that it might not be seen from the court where your head was lying. And now you will so turn it that naught is any matter, and the act already done, because we have a secret and must shut ourselves in with it. That is not true, for I have no secret. I would but protect yours, and only in this sense can there be talk of we and us, and nothing has happened, nor can, for a whole constellation of reasons. The woman. O Sarsif, sweet liar, you will deny our union and our secret, when you have but now confessed that you could but too well understand my wooing, since it lay all too near to your heart? Is that, wicked one, to have no secret together from the world? Do you then not think of me as I think of you? But how would you think of me, and of lying with me, if you could once imagine the pleasure that awaits you, my golden son-boy, in the arms of your heavenly goddess? Let me tell you, and promise you in your ear, shut away from all the world in shadowy depths, what awaits you. For I have never loved, never received a man into my body, have never given even the smallest part of the treasure of my love. It is all treasured up for you, and you shall be so extravagantly rich with it as you could never dream. Hearken to what I whisper. For you, O Sarsif, my body has changed and been transformed to a vessel of love from tip to toe. When you come to me and yield me the glory of your youth, you will not believe that you lie next a human woman, but will satisfy the lust of a god with mother, wife, and sister. For lo, I am she. I am the oil that craves your salt, that the lamp may burn bright in the feast of night. I am the meadow that thirsts after you, and the flood of your manhood's water, bull of your mother, that you swell above her and over her in espousing me, before you leave me, beautiful God, and forget your lotus wreath beside me in the moist earth. Hear now what I whisper, for with every word I draw you deeper into the mystery which we share, and you can no longer withdraw, for we are in the thick of it together, so that there can be no reason in withholding what I ask. Joseph, yes, dearest child, forgive me that I call you so, since we are so far, certainly, in a secret together that I had to draw the curtain because of your distraction. But it has its good sense, and sevenfold, that I must refuse your honeyed suggestion, for it is marshy ground upon which you would lure me, where nothing grows but wild grass, no corn, and would make of me an adulterous ass, of yourself a roving bitch. Then how shall I not protect you against yourself, and myself against the vile transformation? Consider how it would be with us if we were seized of our crime, and it fell upon our heads. Shall I let it come to this, that they strangle you and throw your body to the dogs, or cut off your nose? One cannot think of it, but the ass's share would be uncounted beatings, 1,000 blows for his senseless lechery, if he were not thrown to the crocodiles. These corrections threaten us if our deed take possession of our souls. The woman. Oh, cowardly boy! If you but let yourself dream of the bliss that awaits you by my side, you would think no further, but laugh at punishment, for whoever meted it out could not measure to the height of our joy. Yet behold, he said, dear friend, how madness reduces you for a time below the level of the human. For its advantage and special property it is to think beyond the moment, and consider what comes after. Nor would I fear at all. They were standing close together in the darkened room, speaking softly but urgently, like people who debate something of great moment, with lifted brows, faces flushed with excitement. Nor would I fear at all, he was saying, the punishment for you and me. That were the least of it. But I fear Petipre, our master, himself, not his punishments, as one fears God, not on account of the evil he can visit on one, but himself, in the fear of God. From him have I all my light, and what I am here in house and land, I owe to him. How should I then dare to tread before him and look into his mild eyes, though I had no punishment to fear, after I had lain with you? Hearken, Aeny, and in God's name recall your understanding for that which I would say, for my words will stand, and when our story comes into the mouths of the people, so will it sound, for all that happens can become history and literature, and it may easily be that we are the stuff of history. Therefore have a care for yourself, and take pity upon your story, that you do not become a warning in it and the mother of sin. Much could I say, and give words to many involved matters to resist your desire and mine own, but for the people's mouth, should it come to be put into it, will I say the simplest and most pertinent thing, which every child can understand. Thus, my master hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I. Neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness, and sin against God? These are the words which I say to you for all the future, against the desire which we have for each other. For we are not alone in the world to enjoy the flesh, the one of the other, for there is also Petipre, our great master, in his loneliness, against whom we may not act, instead of doing loyal service to his soul, nor affront him with such an act, which could bring to shame his sensitive dignity, and break the bond of loyalty. He stands in the way of our bliss, and that is an end.